Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast.
It seems like you know ball the way you talk, so.
Thank you. Someone clip that.
I'm not playing in your league unless I can draft myself.
Outside of football, I live a pretty boring life.
With Matt Harmon.
Last night at the bar we were at, I had some really bad queso.
I've never had no bad queso, really.
Because I know there's some guys that are like, oh, no, you know, I'm sticking to my diet. Well, I'm going to plan. I'm going to plan to make sure that I can have a plate.
It's Monday, December 5th, and oh, my God, what an incredible day of football we just lived through, especially the afternoon slate. You know, normally we got a bunch of turds to get through with some of these games. We don't have a lot to do that with today. We got a lot of like good games to talk about, although we have a lot of injuries to talk about as well. Joining me to run through all of that, to try to make sense of some of the madness that we just witnessed here in week number 13, is the great, the one and only Scott Pienowski. Scott, what's going on, buddy?
Not much. One of those things is true. I think there is only just one of me. I'm not sure how great I was in week 13, but we'll try to figure it out.
Well, I say you're great, and that means what I say goes. Okay, so I say it. So that's what's going on here.
Thanks, Matt. You know what, Matt? You're great too.
Well, I appreciate it. Hey, that's some good vibes to start off with, because unfortunately, we got to start off with what was a great game. A really fun game. I feel like a game where we learned a lot, but unfortunately, we have bad news coming out of 49ers 33, Dolphins 17. We'll get to the Dolphins in a second, because I actually think there is certainly a lot to unpack there. The big news, though, is that Jimmy Garoppolo is out with a broken foot. Kyle Shanahan says he's going to miss the rest of the season. You know, Brock Purdy, who is Mr. Irrelevant, he was the last pick in the NFL draft. He is the guy who came in relief of Jimmy Garoppolo. This is now obviously the third starting quarterback that the 49ers have rolled out this year. So, Scott, a lot going on here for the 49ers. I did have a thought in the back of my head, like, what is Trey Lance's injury status? Can he come back at some point this year? But for now, let's live in the world where Brock Purdy is going to navigate a offense that is absolutely stacked with a bunch of dudes that we care about in fantasy.
Yeah, it's sad. It's the Niners may be the best team in the NFC with a healthy Garoppolo or a healthy Trey Lance for that matter. We don't have either one of those right now. Defense was awesome. I know they got beat for the long touchdown in the first snap of the game, but I thought they ate Miami's lunch for the majority of this game. And now it's, you know, I feel like the Niners, if everybody was starting with the same record and you didn't have to deal with who was going to be the number one seed and all that stuff, I thought they had the best team in the NFC going into today. And most of what happened on the field bore that out, but it just, no team is prepared to play its third string quarterback. You know, I mean,
right.
And you know, Brock Purdy, he played 4 years at Iowa State. I don't remember seeing anything that he did. I had no opinion of Brock Purdy before today. I thought he did just fine. I mean, he was conservative. The goal was not to give the game away. He didn't give it away. This is one of those things now where it's like, well, he'll get more practice time. Yes. But teams will get film on him. Yes.
Sure.
We wanted to know who would be the backup to McCaffrey. It was Jordan Mason. 8 for 51 is a pretty nice game on the ground. Yeah, somebody tweeted me randomly, George Kittle stinks. I don't know if I went to that guy's house, tied him up, and forced him to like bet on George Kittle props or something. I don't know what that was in reference to. I remember doing a video on George Kittle in a year where every tight end pretty much stinks. George Kittle is somebody you would start every week. I know he did nothing today, but
also what a goober you have to be to write the words George Kittle stinks. Like, come on, give me a break, pal.
Seriously, yeah. I mean, healthy George Kittle is one of the best three tight ends in the league, and this some years he's been the best tight end in football. So I don't know what that was about, but I'm mostly just sad because Shanahan's a great coach, the skill talent's great, but no team is prepared to play their third string quarterback and feel that great about it. So I think definitely you have to downgrade everybody. The buoyancy of the offense goes down.
Yeah, 100%. Now Brock Purdy, 16th in terms of EPA per dropback. You know, he's right there in the Mac Jones, Taylor Heineke zone. So that kind of really shows you exactly like a guy who's playing like a backup quarterback in Mac Jones for most part of the year, and a guy who is firmly a backup quarterback. Another backup quarterback we saw, Tyler Huntley, was 18th in EPA per dropback in week 13.
Just what I wanted is more quarterbacks to remind me of Mac Jones and Taylor Heineke. So that's just what the NFL needs right yeah. now.
Exactly, especially ones that are captaining an offense, again, that has Debo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk, Christian McCaffrey, George Kittle, even though apparently, according to, you know, user and a bunch of letters, I'm sure, it, you know, he stinks. So I mean, and of course, too, Brock Purdy, like you said it perfectly, he was very, very conservative. He was 23rd in terms of percentage of passes that went 10 plus yards. Like, he was not out there pushing it down the field. I think that's definitely a problem for a guy like Ayuk, who's definitely been a great downfield receiver this year. He didn't have a huge game in this one. Debo didn't really have a huge game either. Obviously, Christian McCaffrey was still massive as a receiver. I think we can expect that to continue, right? Like, that should be even more of a focal point, McCaffrey, as a receiver. So I definitely think I'm downgrading the pass catchers, not really downgrading a guy like McCaffrey. But yeah, I think I'm with you that my big reaction is this just stinks, because this felt like a team that really, you know, it was almost like they cheated life at the beginning, where they lose Trey Lance, but oh, we can just go back to the Jimmy Garoppolo offense, and oh, by the way, let's drop Christian McCaffrey on there. Like, we can make a Super Bowl run with this type of team. I think they have a great defense too, that absolutely put Tua like in the dry, like they stuffed him in the dryer, stuffed him in the locker all day long. Like, they bullied this passing offense that had been unstoppable heading into this game. But it does look like now we're going to deal with this Mr. Irrelevant Brock Purdy the rest of the year. That's a bummer for the 49ers. I'm glad you brought up Mason. That was a key learning point. Like, I don't know what there was no clarity to me going into this that it was going to be like TDP or Jordan Mason. I said that was a totally up in the air situation, but now it looks like we have an answer, and it looks like TDP is not the answer there. So that's a guy that if you stashed him, you could probably just go ahead and drop him. Let's transfer over to the Dolphins side of this, because that might get lost in the Garoppolo news, but you know, Tua, 18 of 33. You mentioned he hit that one pass to Trent Sherfield right away, but after that, he looked like, you know, a guy that was erratic, a guy that was a little jittery. He came out of this game apparently with an ankle injury as well. Does this game move you on like where you kind of thought Tua ranked among NFL quarterbacks, or make you, you know, adjust any expectations for Miami going forward?
It was hard to give Tua a grade on this game because they were missing the two offensive tackles and he was under duress most of the day. They were playing from behind most of the day. They got nothing going on the ground. They didn't even try to run the ball. 8 carries. Jeff Wilson had one touch the whole day. Credit to Mike McDaniel, where when this game was out of hand at the end, I don't know how bad Tua's ankle was. He throws I guess he fumbled and the Niners ran it back. There was no reason to bring him back down two scores, you know. Yeah. Looking at you, Brandon Staley, you know, the game's over with. So they did still run offensive snaps, but at least they let Skylar Thompson throw the final pick just to seal the deal. I mean, there's no reason to expose Tua in that circumstance. The thing that makes me nervous about the Dolphins, now they get the Chargers next week, and the Chargers are a team with flaws, but there's a lot of nasty defenses coming Miami's way. They have a Bills game. They have to play the whole division, right? The AFC East, which is a defensive-oriented division. They have a Bills game coming. Couple of weeks. They have a Jets game down the road. They have a Patriots game down the road, all in the fantasy playoffs. Miami's going to need a healthy offensive line. Tua just lost some of his mojo and some of his confidence. Now, against the Niners defense that is certainly in the top five and maybe the best in football when it's healthy. So it's not like there's any shame playing poorly at San Francisco. Maybe it's just a setup game for Miami. They had the offensive line wasn't ready and Tua just played poorly. But so I don't think I'm going to change his rank going forward, certainly not against the Chargers. I'm just nervous if they don't have a running game or an offensive line they can trust when they get to that teeth of the schedule. It makes me nervous going forward. I mean, but then again, what are you going to do, right? You're going to play Tyreek Hill anyway. You're going to play Jalen Waddle anyway. And I would think most of the managers who have Tua, at this point, Tua has become your pilot guy. So you're probably going to just live or die with whatever he does. But today they didn't have the blocking, and Tua looked very nervous because of it.
Yeah, and going against Nick Bosa, man, Nick Bosa has been unbelievable this year. He was unbelievable from the jump in this game. That entire 49ers defense, like, this is a team that I still think can make a playoff run, at least go to the playoffs and maybe win a game in the playoffs because that defense is that good. D'Amico Ryans is that good. That guy should be a head coach. As soon as the 49ers season is over, he'll be another team's head coach. That's pretty much how this thing is going to go. But yeah, I agree with you that obviously from a fantasy angle, I don't know how much adjusting you can do for Tua, but obviously it'll be a conversation point, him coming off this game, going to face Justin Herbert next week. We'll talk about the Chargers later, but if what they did against Davante Adams was any indication, this should be a nice little bounce back game for the entire Dolphins offense next week. But we have plenty of time to get to that. We have to talk about Bengals 27, Chiefs 24. I saw Greg Rosenthal on Twitter say, hey, can we really call this a rivalry when it's so one-sided? The Bengals have really just had the Chiefs number of late.
Yeah, three of the last five Chief losses in the last 12 months have come to the hands of Cincinnati. This is a game that this is an either-or game. This is a game either team could have won. My strongest takeaway was that Samaje, if you just put a Mixon jersey on Samaje Perine, I don't think anybody could tell the difference. I mean, he looked really good today. He was involved in the running game, involved in the passing game. Isaiah Pacheco did what I'm going to call the Pacheco. He lands in the 60s in rushing yards. He gets a touchdown.
Yeah, for
and
real.
He has limited activity in the passing game. You'll take it. Do you win your week because of Pacheco? Do you win a big DFS contest because of Pacheco? No.
Hey, Scotty, he had those two catches early, and I was like, oh, is this going to be? And then,
here we go. Here we go. Right.
Yeah. It's not a thing.
Right. Also, it was so weird watching, like, I'm watching, like, Red Zone, and they're running through the leading scores of the day, and they go to the tight ends, and you don't see Travis Kelce's name. You just see a bunch of,
very weird.
To use your term, a bunch of goofballs. But it's like, where's Travis Kelce? He's playing today, right? But I would still, I mean, some people say, oh, the Bengals were disrespected. They were underdogs on their own field. I still think Kansas City's a better team, but by a small margin. The Bengals are certainly not intimidated by the Chiefs, and they would feel like they had a good chance to beat them anywhere. But for the most part, this was a good football game and a good fantasy game. Good to see Jamar Chase looking healthy. T. Higgins gets in the box again. Again, Perine, you know, score one for just having all those lottery tickets on your bench. I mean, Perine was a guy we didn't know until today. It wasn't really clear if Mixon was going to play until Sunday, but once Perine got the go-ahead, I think everybody probably moved them into their DFS lineup, top 20 at running back, whatever it is. I'd like to see these teams play again, and I think they will.
Yeah, I think they probably will too. So many takeaways here coming out of it. I love that you said, you know, that's just the Pacheco. But I think, hey, look, if you have Pacheco on your team and, like, you're getting 14 carries out of him and, like, odds to score a touchdown, that was, like, basically the thesis of why you'd want to be in on CEH, right? Like, I think Pacheco's just capitalized on those opportunities more than other players have in that position previously.
By the way, I want to make this one point. It's interesting how the frustration of the Chiefs offense has gone from, oh my God, we can't land on a running back, this is driving me crazy, to, oh my God, the receivers, yeah, I never know who to play. That's the position that's the frustrating one. Now, at least with Pacheco and McKinnon, I think we have a fair level of certainty of what their roles are going to be week in, week out, and we can project them as such. They both scored today. When people ask me Juju questions or MVS questions, I have no idea what to tell them. It's Rita Mahomes. MVS had a couple of long catches today. That's great. I mean, I don't know how you can live sustainably from that. I was low on Juju. I felt like I paid for that for a while. I compensated for it. Since then, he's done nothing. I know he lost some time due to a concussion, so maybe he's not 100% healthy right now. Who would have thought it was possible that Patrick Mahomes, who's no worse than the first or second, he was the MVP favorite into this week. Now, Jalen Hurts had a huge game, so maybe Hurts has made up ground on him. But if you had told me that Mahomes could have an MVP season and no receiver would really come for the ride and be an overwhelming win, because you'd say, oh, okay, well, Juju going off or Hardman going off, or, oh, what were they traded for Kadarius Toney? He's going off, right? I mean, somebody is coming along for the ride. It can't all be Travis Kelce, but in the passing game, it really is just Travis Kelce.
It really is. You said this was like the classic, like, it's a classic Pacheco game. This was the classic MVS game, right? 6 targets, 2 catches, 71. And there was at least a couple of, like, mind bending drops in there too. But, like, it's normally the whole, like, always, it's a one trick pony. Like, it's disrespectful to players, but, like, MVS is literally good at one thing. Like, he can stretch the field and that's it. Like, that's pretty much it. He made a couple big plays. That's great to see. But, like, your point about Juju is well taken. Now, he ran a route on 77% of the dropbacks. He did suffer what seemed like another head injury in this game and missed some time, but did go back into the game. So they did at least miss a few drives there. Like, yeah, you're right. It's been sort of a tale of almost like 3 seasons for Juju. There was the quiet start, the really hot middle, and now it's sort of like this back and forth injury situation. And Scott, like, at least we used to be able to predict the 3 guys that were going to be on the field for the Kansas City Chiefs at wide receiver. Is going to be MVS, it was going to be Juju, it was going to be Hardman. Now Juju leads the team, the wide receivers, with 77% routes per dropback. Like, the rest of those dudes, MVS is at 58. Justin Watson's at 48.4. Sky Moore is a 32% player. Like, they're completely rotating this group. They're playing a lot of 3 tight ends, like this guy Noah Gray. This guy Jody Fortson is out there a ton. So it is a great offense, but, like you said, not a lot there from a predictable fantasy standpoint.
There's one other frustrating thing about the Chiefs, and I realize nobody wants to talk about the Broncos offense, although we may talk about it in passing. They still have 2 Broncos games left next week and week 17, and Denver's defense is fantastic. As I've been saying just about every week, only one Broncos game has gone over the total all season because the Broncos don't score and they stop the other team from scoring. Now the Chiefs have a chance to put up 30 against anybody that that good, but sure. You would have, if you were invested in the Chiefs offense, you would have liked to have one of those Bronco games tucked away already. And maybe the other one tucked away in the final week that we don't use for fantasy generally. Instead, they're both in the eye of the, you know, next week is going to be a de facto playoff game for a lot of fantasy managers. They try to get in the playoffs or solidify their seeding, and then they're waiting in week 17. So that's not ideal. Of course, again, Mahomes and Reed can do it against anybody. You would never sit Travis Kelce, but it's just frustrating that they have to face the Broncos at a time when you prefer not to.
No, that's a great point. It's really, you're right, it's frustrating to put it in one way. The Bengals, man, the Bengals are for real. Feel great about them as a team right now. Samaje Perine, it is kind of funny. I've always said that it's weird that Perine has sort of become like their passing down back and Mixon was sort of their early down banger, at least coming into this year, right? But because their roles, they played together in college and their roles were completely reversed, Mixon and Perine. They played together at Oklahoma, and like Perine, who looks like and was the early down banger for Oklahoma, and then Mixon was like known for his pass catching skills. But you know, six catches again for Perine in this game. Joe Burrow's thrown to running backs a ton this year, and I think like his time to throw in this game was about 2.5 seconds. Like, he's typically one of the top five, top 10, like longest time to throw quarterbacks, but he has really taken another step, I think, as a processor, as a quarterback. He also runs 11 times in this game. That was great decision-making by him. And now it's like, oh, by the way, this team has taken a step. They've evolved a little bit. Burrow, I think, has taken another step within the context of this offense. Now you just drop Ja'Marr Chase in there. It's really easy to get super excited about the Bengals as a team in the NFL and as a fantasy unit as well.
You know, Burrow's feeling it and seeing the field and understanding all that he's processing on a day where he runs 11 times for 46 yards and a touchdown, and he only takes one sack. And there were times where he was under pressure. One of the late possessions when they finally iced the game, he was under pressure. I'm like, Joe, you get rid of the ball, and he ends up running for like 3 or 4 yards. So he's willing. One of the great things about Burrow and yet maddening things about Burrow is he will hold the ball to set up a play sometimes. But we saw Cincinnati make such an investment in their offensive line before the season. It didn't play well early in the year. Part of that was Burrow. Part of that was the line. We know these things can take time to gel. I feel like if they don't have a fortress in front of Burrow, at least it's a plus offensive line. And he's a guy I would just follow him. He's perfect frontman for both of these guys are perfect frontmen for their teams. You know, they say the right things. They do the right things on the field. You know, they take a hit, they just get up, you know. I think we're going to see another Chiefs-Bengals game in the playoffs, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, should be really fun. I just think Burrow, like is a great point there. He is a guy that I would go to bat for sure. He's just playing that well right now. His whole team is playing that well around him. Next game up here, another awesome game in the afternoon window. Raiders 27, Chargers 20. Herbert made it a little interesting at the end. Unbelievable throw to Keenan Allen, but there was a couple of times where the Raiders just absolutely dominated this game, Scott, and it was mostly on the back of, again, their two dudes. Like, Josh Jacobs and Davante Adams have unbelievable fantasy roles. I mean, the fantasy roles that you dream of, right? And obviously, you know, Josh Jacobs is a feature back. He's coming off this 300-yard game last week. He's a game-time decision, quote-unquote, on this game. Didn't look like it. 26 carries, 144 yards, a touchdown, two catches as well. But, man, Davante Adams, like, Scott, I think you could argue that Davante Adams is having his best season right now as a pro, which is crazy because, obviously, he is coming off a bunch of storied seasons with the Packers. You know, he's been unbelievable statistically. But, like, Davante Adams has always been unbelievable when you isolate him from Aaron Rodgers in at least the last 4 years in Green Bay, right? You know, he's number one or number two in success rate versus man and press coverage for reception perception every year. He's an elite route runner, elite player. And now he's on pace for 112 receptions, 1,600 yards, and 17 touchdowns in 17 games. Like, statistically, that would be some of his best work. And again, like, it's not all about stats. I think counting stats is kind of a silly way to evaluate pure wide receiver play most of the times. But it's just unbelievable that, you know, Rodgers obviously struggling in Green Bay. You know, the Raiders aren't that great of a team, right? They're 5-7 now at this point. But it's like, we can't lose track of the fact that I think Adams has had an incredible statement year for his career. And this game, I think, against the Chargers, he was, like, completely uncoverable. It was probably the statement game within that season.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I feel like the Raiders got their season fixed. It may be too late because they're just 5-7, but maybe I was just a little too late to adjust to it. Not that, what are you going to do? You have to trade for Jacobs or Adams. I mean, the trade deadline's gone in most leagues and people would have wanted a lot for them anyway. But it was like a month ago where people were thinking, oh, okay, who did you wrong in the first round? Yeah, you shouldn't have taken Davante Adams. I mean, Davante Adams has a decent chance to end the year as a wide receiver one, and he's going to end the year in the top three. Derek Carr having a nice season. Jacob, as you said, the concentration here is so ridiculously narrow. I know they did spend a bunch of targets on Mac Hollins today. They didn't go anywhere. But pretty much when somebody taps you on the shoulder and says the Raiders just scored, you know it's one of two guys.
Yeah.
And that's a fantasy dream. On the flip side, you mentioned that Herbert throw to Allen, one of my favorite throws of the day. What a dart that was. But I wish I could fast forward to the spring when hopefully the Chargers are going to overhaul their wide receiver room, because it's missing something. It's like, here we are, we're at our dinner, we're eating our meal. It's like something, you forgot to put in one of the ingredients. You know, you built a crib and you didn't use like four of the nuts and three of the bolts and the thing's going to fall apart. That's how I feel about the Chargers. The fact that I picked the Chargers in this game feels stupid, because as it played out, I'm like, oh man, the Raiders are obviously the right side here. And, you know, I picked the Chargers to go to the Super Bowl before the season, which obviously is not going to happen. But I'm done. I'm done with this Chargers team in the sense of, I need prove it weeks from a lot of these guys. I mean, yeah, Eckler didn't have a great game today. He'll be fine. It's nice to see Keenan Allen getting downfield, which doesn't do all that often. I'm still a Herbert fan long term, but I was wrong about so many Charger things this year, and it's frustrating.
Yeah, I hope they don't fall into the trap of looking at their IR list, which is, you know, quite lengthy, right? They've had a ton of injuries. They suffer an injury for Sebastian Joseph Day in this game. We'll see if it's, you know, long-term. Zion Johnson, another guy, got a little banged up in this game as well. That was my takeaway watching this game, was they're just getting their ass kicked in the trenches, man. And they, by the way, they get their ass kicked in the trenches pretty much on a weekly basis, right? Like, they're not a good running team. Austin's talked about that on the show all year long. They're not a great, they don't run the ball well. They've really obviously struggled to defend the run. They also struggle to defend the pass. Their head coach is supposed to be a defensive guy. The defense always stinks. Like, they're just kind of like a soft team to me. And, you know, I hope they don't sit there in the offseason and say, oh, well, we lost all these dudes to injuries. Like, nah, I think there needs to be some like bigger conversations about the way they play offense, the way they play defense, and like really from a top down type of situation. That's my take on it.
No, I'll co-sign that.
All right. Dolphins at Chargers, Sunday Night Football next week. That's going to be like the take bowl, right? Like, there's going to be takes on two of them.
Yeah, what are they going to talk about there? I mean, what could possibly be the angle that they're going to spend 90 minutes on?
Oh, yeah. Neither one of it. Like, Tua's probably coming off his worst game of the season. Herbert suffers another loss where he, you know, the criticism, the social media quarterback, like, he makes this throw that goes viral on social media, but they lose the game. Yeah. Gonna be a lot of takes heading up to this week. If you can't deal with that stuff, like, log off. Okay, don't be.
Well, you know what? Hey, as we said in the preview, I'm just glad we were spared another Broncos Island game. Nobody wants that. God, that's the power of the Broncos offense. It stinks so much that NBC said ran away from a Mahomes and, you know, Chiefs game. They wanted no part of that because that meant the Broncos would also have to be featured. You couldn't just televise the Chiefs' possessions. You'd have to also televise when the Broncos had the ball.
Would you rather, Scott, have to sit down and watch, like, from snap one to the end, a 2022 Broncos game, or have to read, like, a bunch of, like, read the timeline, every single tweet on, like, Tua Herbert and the takes, and watch every video from who's the guy, Emmanuel Acho, you know, the social media quarterback? Which would you rather have to do?
I think I'd rather do the social media slog, that 500-yard Shawshank slog, only because you can't talk about Herbert and Tua without some good highlights coming your way. If you talk about the 2022 Broncos, there's nothing good that's ever going to come of it. You know, social media, when it becomes all hot takey, at least some of the hot takes will be funny, or some of the highlights will be interesting to watch. You might learn something in the middle of all the trolling. But there's nothing good comes from talking about the Denver Broncos.
I think, as much as I hate the Broncos, I think I'd have to watch the Broncos.
Wow. Okay. Well,
yeah. I already regret it. So I don't know.
I want you and Dalton do the Stat Nerd podcast. I want you to talk about the Broncos for like 35 minutes. I want you to rewatch all of their plays on the TV feed, and then I want you to watch them all on the All 22 feed. I want you to do a reception perception special on the Denver Broncos passing tree. Okay. I want I want historical comps to Russell Wilson, you know, both on the field. I want you to comp his house to somebody else's house, his marriages to somebody else's marriages.
I take it back. Yeah. I take it back. Give me 35 minutes give me 3 hours of scrolling Twitter then in that case for Tua debates. I'll take it. Never mind.
Okay.
You've changed my mind. Good. We'll get to the Broncos a little later on in the program, but let's talk about
maybe.
Two actually
we might skip
teams.
It. We might.
I'm
telling you right now, we're on the timer. If we run out of time, this will be like when they go to the other program already in progress. We may not get to the Broncos and Ravens. And by the way, Broncos and Ravens fans, if you're waiting for comments on that game, of course it's the last game we're going to talk about if we have time.
If
no promises
time.
Meant.
Vikings 27, Jets 22.
Here we go.
You know, nice game by the Vikings. This doesn't really, like, you know, Mike White, he throws two interceptions. One of them clanks off of one of his pass catcher's hands. I think it was Corey Davis early on in the game. The other one was late in the game. You know, but he still gets 369 yards. Still, like, shows the talent, I think, in the play calling booth and also within the Jets offensive roster. And it sounds like afterwards that Garrett Wilson was singing his praises after the game, talking about how he'd go to war with that guy. I think this does not change anything in terms of like the Mike White bandwagon, basically.
Not at all. The wrong team won this game. The Jets have 486 total yards. Vikings have 287. The Jets average 5.9 a play. The Vikings average 4.3. In the bold predictions piece we did, you put a bunch of Mike White propaganda. I was actually prepared to do that, and you beat me to it. So
it's always fun, the little race, like, because we don't talk about who's going to do these bold predictions, because I've gotten there sometimes, and you or Andy or Dalton's like done the one. I was like, well, all right. Good thing I waited till 9:45.
Barron's has already done his bold predictions for the rest of the season. His bold prediction for week 18 has already been filed. He's so efficient.
What a machine.
It's actually nauseating. But no, hey, Mike White threw the ball downfield. He threw some dynamite throws. Wilson had a huge game. He had a tight window throw to Corey Davis. That was beautiful in the fourth quarter. They would have had the go-ahead touchdown if Braxton Berrios doesn't drop a perfectly thrown pass.
Oh, yeah, I know.
On fourth down, you know, I don't know. Maybe they could have run the ball. And Zonovan Knight did what we wanted. We wanted somebody to take control of the backfield. You know, I went after Zonovan Knight in waivers. I just didn't have enough capital to get him. So I'm like, well, I don't have Zonovan Knight. And then he plays a pretty good football game, and almost nobody else in that backfield gets touches. And I'm like, oh, man, he was the guy to get. And I tried to get him. I didn't get Bam Knight. I think the Jets offense is still a fun team. Really good defensive team. Lots of skill talent on offense. Congratulations, Vikings. You won a game where Kirk Cousins couldn't even get 5 yards per attempt. He gets that late touchdown to Jefferson to kind of bail out his day. We've said this a lot this season. Somehow, with the Vikings cruising to the NFC North title, this is the worst season of Kirk Cousins' career. Despite new coaching, despite a different offensive shape, despite getting TJ Hawkinson about a month ago, and despite having Justin Jefferson, who's one of the top two or three receivers in the world. This team's going to lose in the playoffs. This team is such – look, when I say they're frauds, I mean they're not 10-2 good. They should be like, well, let's see, what's 7-5 maybe, 8-4 maybe? They're going to lose to somebody. I would pick Dallas to beat them. If Dallas was playing at Minnesota, I guess they already played, right? Dallas. They kicked the
blew them out. Yeah.
Yeah. I would pick Dallas to beat them anywhere. I'd pick Philadelphia to beat them anywhere, even if the Niners have a backup quarterback.
Also saw that game, too. Saw Vikings-Eagles.
I'm not – Adam Thielen, did he just retire at halftime in this game?
He retired after eating a turkey on Thanksgiving. That was it. That was it for Adam Thielen.
It's just so weird. The Jets are the team I'm in on. I think the Jets are better than the Vikings. I really do.
Yeah. No, I mean, I get it. Like, I mean, Garrett Wilson goes completely, off in this game. 15 targets, 162 yards. And, you know, Garrett Wilson's a superstar. There were plays, like, left on the field because, like, Mike White missed him by just this much with Garrett Wilson. But they could not tackle that guy. They could not tackle Corey Davis in this game. Like, the defense for Minnesota, I think, is a big problem. As much as, like, yeah, I agree with you that Kirk Cousins has been, like, a little hit or miss this year. And I think he's definitely statistically, he's having his worst Viking season for sure. I think the fact that they're opportunistic on defense, and again, they get two takeaways in this game, one of which, again, was Tyler Conklin's fault. Conklin, by the way, as much as we're going to talk about A.J. Brown's revenge game, Conklin on the other side of a revenge game dropped, like, two catchable passes that would have moved the chains. Tough scene there. But you know, this is definitely a team in Minnesota that is exploitable on both sides of the ball. So I agree with you on that one. But yeah, I think the big thing for me is just I feel very good about the Jets. Their defense played well in this game. You know, they did their best against Justin Jefferson, and the offense has a lot of life to it, man. And it sounds like there is no second thought about taking Mike White off the field.
What's a little frustrating to me is had you told me White would get the 369 and Elijah Moore would get the 6 targets, I would assume there would be at least one or two splash plays. I didn't see the Moore targets, so I'll have to go back and see, you know, did he run bad routes? Were they throwaways? Did he leave anything on the field? But I thought after last week, the 2 splash plays on the 2 targets that Elijah Moore was looking at a bigger role. Now, I don't know what to make of 6 targets when they throw it 55 times, but not much came of that. And Conklin can't complain about his opportunities too. He gets 7 targets in this game. And Corey Davis, I always said that Corey Davis would have been a great guy for the Jets to trade because they really don't need him long-term, but he could be a good football player for a lot of these receiver-hungry teams like the Ravens, like the Chargers, maybe the Packers, although they're starting to find some answers. Corey Davis played well today. He's always been a good football player, so he wasn't top 5 in the draft good. You know, he's never going to justify his draft capital. I get it, but he'd be welcome on any of my teams.
Agree with you. Elijah Moore ran 45 routes. Corey Davis ran 46 routes, which I know, like, the bottom line stuff is what people want to see. But like, remember, once the guy goes, you know, like gets inactive for making a trade request, like you take your expectations like all the way back to zero and you have to start thinking like, okay, if he's just getting a playing time boost every single week, like that's good news for Elijah Moore. There were a couple misfires to Elijah Moore. I watched this game almost like the entire way through. And there was one play where this was on him 100%, obviously. He only gets 1 foot down, on the sideline. He doesn't even like almost looked like he just was completely unaware. Like, I need to get the second foot down. It's like, bro, you're playing in the NFL, pal. This ain't college anymore. By the way, we need like a universal rule with the 1 foot down, 2 foot down. This is one of my hot takes, but like, it should be 2 feet or 1 feet all, like at all levels. It shouldn't be like in the NFL, you jump to 2 and college, you only do 1, but that's a whole nother subject.
Well, when we used to play, like we'd play football, right? When you get older, you just play tackle football and you try to like maim the people in your neighborhood. It's very gruesome and ghoulish. But before that, you'd play touch football. Oh, the idea was that, was it one hand touch? Is it two hand touch? And I said, look, it's fingernail touch. If any part of your hand touches the person with the ball, they're down. Because then we don't have to make judgment calls. And I was way ahead of all these reviews that we have to watch and everything. And why not 1 foot? If the NFL went 1 foot, so what would you have? You'd have more catches at the boundary that would count? Who'd be against that?
Every defensive player who already thinks they're getting slighted by the fact that the game is so skewed towards offense. So they would be the ones opposed to it. But I think obviously those of us on the outside would probably enjoy it. All right, let's move on. Lions 40, Jaguars 14. Scott, pretty impressive day for the old Detroit Lions. Hey, shout out to Dalton. Jared Goff had a huge game in this one.
Jared Goff did have a huge game. Negative shout out to me. I made the SAT joke about DeAndre Swift, you know, 7, 8, 9 touches a week. The next number's not 18. Well, the next number was 18.
Finally, well, you said it wasn't 17. You were right. It wasn't 17. Okay. I specifically remember 17. You said 17. So you nailed it.
Whatever. The point is, my takeaway on Swift was that I wanted to show me game. Either the Lions don't think he's healthy or they don't trust him, or maybe they've soured on him a little bit. Well, he was really good today and was active, was more involved than Jamal Williams. Jamal Williams saved it with some touchdown deodorant. So I'm just owning that. You know, all you people like, you told me not to play Swift, or I still played him anyway. Yeah, you suck. Okay, yeah, you won this round. I'll take it. Lions have won 4 out of 5. The loss was to a good Buffalo team. Jared Goff is above the league average in like every front door metric, you know, YPA, touchdown rate, interception rate, quarterback rate. He's playing good football, man. And, you know, 11 of the 12 targets at St. Brown were completions. They didn't get much from Jameson Williams today, which is what they shouldn't be exposing him to a lot. There's a guy you definitely need a prove it game on.
Right.
Yeah. And the best of all is you get the Minnesota defense. That's secondary. Again, they gave Mac Jones the best game of his career. And even though the Jets didn't beat them, you know, Mike White was rolling the ball up and down the field all day against them. So I would think the good times roll for the Lions against Minnesota next week. I think the Lions have a good chance to win that game. And, you know, Williams is in play. Swift is in play. St. Brown's in play. And in a year where so many quarterbacks, you know, the Wilsons and the Bradys and the Rodgerses and Staffords, and for various reasons, Lamar Jackson's hurt now, and he's been in a slump for a while anyway. A lot of quarterbacks have let us down. A lot of quarterbacks have been, we just can't trust them. And Jared Goff's in circle trust. And maybe that means he's like quarterback 11 or quarterback 12 or quarterback 10. And you know, you'd like to have a quarterback better than Goff. You'd rather have Mahomes or Hurts or all those guys. But Jared Goff's turning into a nice profit player on an offense, offensive line we like, right? Offensive scheme we like. This is a good team. And they have indoor game next week against a team that can't cover anybody. I'm all in on the Lions.
Yeah. I mean, they're really well set up at this point. DeAndre Swift, I know they're like, there's definitely a conversation to have, like, was his usage kind of game script related? Because obviously they were blowing out the Jacksonville Jaguars. You know, at one point Trevor Lawrence leaves this game. But even in the first half, like, DeAndre Swift was outsnapping Jamal Williams 28-18. He had been targeted on 31% of his routes in the first half, or in the first three quarters, and he had a 45% share of the team rushes. Like, you know, so, and that was more than Jamal Williams. So I maybe it all, it, like, again, we never know this stuff, right? Like the health component of it. So maybe he's just healthier now, and like now they're confident kind of ramping him back up, right? And it's just one of those things we would never know. And like it was definitely strange when like Justin Jackson was getting touches and DeAndre Swift was getting minimized. But I don't know, maybe Swift moves forward as like a guy that we can trust. That would be certainly awesome, because I think we all agree he's a good player. And, you know, speaking of guys we all agree is a good player, I mean, Amon-Ra St. Brown gets to the box twice. Think that felt like a sigh of relief, you know, because he had scored three touchdowns and they all came in the first 2 weeks. He had three touchdowns on 78 receiving targets coming into this game, has two touchdowns in this one. That was great to see because he's just been so unlucky getting tackled inside the 5 yard line. On the other side of this, Scott, it does look like Trevor Lawrence dodged a serious injury. I thought at one point, like, when he got taken down and, you know, left the game, I was like, oh, that's going to be troublesome. But he does come back, throws a touchdown to Evan Ingram. Looks like he's going to be okay. The guy that's interesting in this game coming out of it is Christian Kirk. Obviously, he has a good matchup. He has 100 yards. And the great Zay Jones. I mean, people want you to talk about Zay Jones. Stop. Like, he's going to have games every now and again because he's an NFL player and he's out there running a ton of routes. But he catches two balls for 16 yards. Like, okay, great.
Yeah, just frustrating, right? I mean, Lawrence coming off the best game of his career, that comeback win against Baltimore. Even though I did pick Detroit in this game, I certainly thought the Jaguars would be well over 20 points. I thought Lawrence would have a decent fantasy day. That getting banged up in the game had something to do with it. But Jones doesn't come through. ETN doesn't get enough touches to be relevant, although he was fine as a runner. I'm so desperate. I'm so eager to get some wins from that 2021 draft class. And
yeah,
I fell in love with the game Lawrence played last week. Whatever. This isn't the Ray Lewis Ravens. I mean, their defense is okay. It's not like it's impenetrable or anything, but major step back for these guys. I'm sure I told at least one person to play Zay Jones today. It was, you know, as a wide receiver three, as a guy who I thought would be around 50 to 70 yards with maybe a 30% chance of a touchdown. He obviously came nothing close to that today. So I guess we have to go back and for the drawing board with the Jaguars. I still think Lawrence's trajectory, his arrow is pointing up. You're allowed to have a bad game once in a while, but it was just frustrating to see it in a matchup where I thought this was going to be a pinball game on both sides. It's like the Lions, you know, hogged the pinball machine and the Jaguars didn't keep up. It's and Evan Ingram had his monthly touchdown, so now we can play him for the next 2 or 3 weeks and watch him do nothing, which I'm sure he probably will.
Yeah, couldn't have said that one better myself. All right. We got to take a quick break. On the other side of this, we get to talk about AJ Brown's revenge game. All right, Eagles 35, Titans 10. This one wasn't competitive. You know, obviously, Derrick Henry is definitely in a big time slump for the Tennessee Titans. Treylon Burks catches one pass, 25 yards, touchdown. He gets hit, rough looking. I can't believe he held onto that ball, but he scores the touchdown. He leaves the game with concussions, not seen again. And, you know, Tennessee just gets outclassed by the A.J. Brown-led Philadelphia Eagles, Scott. This was a huge game for Jalen Hurts and all the boys through the air.
Yeah, maybe Hurts can get into that MVP conversation with Mahomes. Although I still side with what Frank and Schwab and I have said, that Mahomes probably needs to get hurt to lose the job. But, I mean, Hurts putting up a 4-touchdown day against a Titans defense that we all respect. And everybody that we want comes along for the ride, right? I mean, Miles Sanders didn't have an efficient day, but at least he gets a touchdown, so you bail out with that. A.J. Brown dominates his old team. Devonta Smith is one of his best games of the season. He's active. And so it's not one of these, oh, Gainwell scored or Quez Watkins scored or Zach Pascal scored. None of that. The Eagles went to their core guys and did it. You know, all week I was saying, I think maybe the Niners are better than the Eagles. I think maybe the Cowboys are better than the Eagles. To reevaluate that. I also moved Philadelphia out of number one in my power rankings. I had the Niners first. I have to totally reevaluate that now that Garoppolo is hurt. But maybe the Eagles were the right answer all along. On the flip side, I thought it was here we go for Treylon Burks. He gets the early touchdown. I'm all excited. Gets concussed. That throws the hole. This is an offense that didn't have a receiver to lose, and Burks was starting to be their number one guy. So that really hurts. I mean, they end up being led in receiving yards by a backup tight end or a secondary tight end, and Okonkwo, who I really know nothing about other than the fact that he was really active today. But yeah, Derrick Henry was slowed down. The Eagles have invested in their front. You know, they brought in Sue and some other guys, and they looked like the best team in the NFC today. Because I get that Tennessee's a flawed team, but Tennessee's a good team. They're a well-coached team. And if you kick the living snot out of Tennessee, basically from the opening whistle, you impress me. So I had the Eagles as kind of a B-plus, A-minus team before today. I think that was not giving them enough credit. This is the NFC favorite, and you know, maybe I'm just the one guy who couldn't figure it out.
Yeah, no, I get it. I think there was obviously reasons to question them coming into this, like especially from a passing game perspective. But then A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith go out and dominate like that. Jalen Hurst plays incredibly well. You got to be feeling great about the Eagles right now. Quez Watkins has a little bit of a shoulder injury. I can't imagine how like much more highly concentrated this passing game could be between Devontae Smith and A.J. Brown with Dallas Goedert out, but maybe that would just make it even more so. Last
still
note
hoping,
on Derek.
Still hoping they get Goddard back for the playoffs too, with fantasy playoffs, which is possible.
It sounds like they might.
I've heard week 15 is possible for him. He's in a year where we'll take anything we can get at tight end. I'm at the point now where if Goddard came back, even if they said he's going to be on limited snaps, I'd probably just play him anyway.
Oh, yeah. They would have to tell me he's going to play like five snaps. And even then I'd be like, you know what?
On one leg. Yeah. He's going to be out there with a cane. Yeah. Okay. It's Dallas Goedert. I'll take my chances.
I mean, shoot. If Gronk unretired tomorrow, we'd all play him. No matter what. Right. Like, so that's kind of where we're at with the tight end position. I mean, shoot. Even if like Jason Witten unretired, I'm like, you know what?
Are you spending all your fab on Okonkwo? So you could go after him with two hands?
I don't think so. But then again, like, I don't know. I'm doing the I took a zero from Dawson Knox in a lot of leagues right now. So I'm not exactly thrilled with what I'm dealing with tight end. So I don't know. I'll think about it, but probably not. By the way, just one last note on Derrick Henry. Again, I know it's been a really, really bad run for him here. I'm a little like, you know, again, these things with injuries, we don't always know. I'm wondering if he's hurt, right? Like, I'm wondering if he's kind of worn down a little bit. Dontrell Hilliard's a guy I think should be stashed more than he is at this point. The Titans get the Jaguars, the Chargers, and the Texans the next three games. Like, that could be a slump buster for sure.
Merry Christmas, Derrick Henry. Yeah.
No kidding. All right. Next game up here, Packers 28, Bears 19. Great to see Justin Fields back in action. But, man, I mean, I think Christian Watson, another two touchdown game, that's got to be the story, the fantasy story coming out of this one.
You know, it's at 8 touchdowns in 4 weeks, one rushing, crazy, one receiving. A.J. Dillon started to play well the last couple of games. And Aaron Rodgers, look, I'm not going to throw a parade for Aaron Rodgers, 5.9 yards per attempt, 182 yards passing. But the Bears fans, he just always beats the Bears. The Packers, I felt like I got some equity taking Chicago, some closing line value, because it seemed like the flow was going to be that Fields would go. And Fields was okay. He was kind of what you get with Fields, right? You hit a couple of picks. He was active as a runner. I can't come down too hard on him. When, look who he's throwing to. I mean, Equanimeous St. Brown, N'Keal Harry, Chase Claypool, Dante Pettis, David Montgomery, Cole Kmet. That's your receiving group.
Goofballs, talk about it.
Kmet's going to finish as a top five tight end without a touchdown because the position was especially gross this week and gross most of the time. My one complaint with Watson is that isn't he playing well enough that he should have a bigger market share? Only six targets on 29 to go around. I don't know. I just feel like you should be – why are you wasting targets on Randall Cobb? Why are you four for none of them complete? You know, why are you throwing the ball to some of these guys? You know, I feel like he should have 8 to 10 targets off the bus at this point.
Yeah, no, I think that makes a lot of sense. The one thing the Randall Cobb plays, like, especially the one like vertical one, like an end zone target deep down the field to Randall Cobb in the year 2022. I don't know that I'm thinking that's got, like, let me tell you what, I don't know what the EPA per target should be on that, or like the expected points are on that. By the way, I'm about ready to throw like expected fantasy points into the dumpster, but just as like, not as a use case, but as like a joke about it. Right. Like, anyways, whole nother subject. Christian Watson though, runs around 94% of the dropbacks. He does have a 20% target share in back-to-back games, so we're getting there, Scott. I think the argument would be, you know, he's still as explosive as he is, as awesome as he is, he's still not a complete receiver, but I think the good thing is we're getting growth every single week with Christian Watson. So, I mean, yeah, I agree with you. It would be great to see him, like, give him a couple more deep overs, give him a couple more crossing routes, stuff like that.
It's what we're looking at with rookie receivers, right? I mean, you want to see them take a step forward in the second half of the year. You know, Burks was starting to do that. He gets hurt today. Garrett Wilson, who's been good all year, but I'm just a grown-ass man schooling Minnesota, I thought, the whole day. And Watson, maybe the best example of it, because he was so invisible early on. But it's hard to get in the Aaron Rodgers circle of trust. It's probably harder to get into the circle of trust with Aaron Rodgers than it is Bob De Niro and Meet the Parents, where that whole circle of trust stuff came from, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think De Niro trusted Ben Stiller more than Aaron Rodgers trusted his rookie receivers earlier in the year. But Christian Watson's there, man. He's not going anywhere. So I don't think I have him anywhere. I've been ranking him proactively. I think I've been hitting him on props and stuff in DFS, but I don't have him on any of my rosters. Very frustrating.
Yeah, I had him on one team where I, like, lost Cooper, just timing wise, lost Cooper Kupp and went to the waiver wire and, like, unloaded basically to get Christian Watson. And I don't know, that team's got running back problems though, so probably not going
to
go.
It's so hard to find a major hit on the wire. I think it's been a pretty bad waiver wire year anyway, but yeah, you usually don't get major hits at receiver. So Watson's going to go down as one of the biggest ones, I think.
Rookie receivers are going to become like a, you know, I was having a conversation about this with people on Twitter today, including Dwayne McFarland, who inspired it because I retweeted one of his posts about, like, rookie receivers in the second half of the year, like you were just talking about. They're almost going to become like lottery ticket running backs, where if you can stomach holding them early in the year when they probably aren't doing anything. Now, Christian Watson was dealing with injuries, stuff like that, so that's just one example there. But, like, if you can stomach holding them through them just not doing anything on your roster, like, they need to benefit from chaos less than, like, you know, the traditional backup stash running back does, because, like, you need an injury for Alexander Mattison to come through for you. You need an injury for, by the way, AJ Dillon in this game. He was drafted to not be a stash guy. He's basically been a stash guy. He had 18 carries in the game. Aaron Jones has a shin injury in coming out of this game, so that's probably why AJ Dillon has those, you know, beefy carry numbers. But, like, you need injuries for those guys to hit. You don't need injury. You just need growth for guys like Christian Watson, for Treylon Burks, for Garrett Wilson. You know, Drake London, obviously, George Pickens, we're going to talk about them in a little bit game later. Not as much, but still, they're going to kind of become like backup running backs. You just stash them on your bench. You live with them not doing anything, hoping to get that upside later in the year.
The idea is, I think Levitan was saying this week on one of the ETR pods, which are always great. Running back fantasy production is generally about opportunity. Wide receiver fantasy production is usually about talent. So the talented guys are all going to be drafted. You're looking at your waiver wire. You're trying to find, you know, talent on the waiver wire. Well, a slow developing rookie receiver is the perfect way to bet.
Yeah.
Because there's an excuse for him not doing anything for the first couple months, maybe the season. Maybe he wasn't playing. Maybe he was hurt. Maybe the team didn't want to overload him right away. But those are the type of slow developing Polaroids that can be a clear picture in the second half of the year. And there's just been so many cases of it. The great thing is, a lot of times you don't have to draft these guys, right? And the person who's probably benefiting from Christian Watson in a lot of leagues didn't even think about drafting him, but yeah, you know, just did what you did, scooped him up when they had a need, and then they're getting the benefit of it now. So again, opportunity is your running back guidepost. Talent is your wide receiver guidepost. So bet on guys who have talent who, for whatever reason, haven't gotten on the field yet, because good things can happen when they do.
That makes a ton of sense. By the way, one last shout out to Justin Fields. That touchdown run of his was ridiculous. Absolutely absurd. But, you know, otherwise through the air, it's the same old stuff for Justin Fields. Next game up here. Scott, did I? I know I said this on the preview show that, like, these two teams felt like mirror images of each other. They felt extremely evenly matched. Well, the Commanders and Giants are so evenly matched, Scott, that they tie at 20 points on Sunday.
Yeah. I said in my throwing darts column, I said, why are the Giants underdogs? I feel like they should be favored. I feel like these are very similar teams. And thank God they were underdogs, because we get to cash a ticket.
Yeah, right.
Because the game ends in a tie. And I feel like if they played tomorrow, it would probably be another tie. And speaking of those rookies,
they play in 2 weeks, by the way. Yeah, there you go. They go on a bye. The Commanders go on a bye, and then they play the Giants again.
I'm calling it right now. This will be the first. I don't even know if this is true or not, but I assume it has to be. This will be the first time two teams have tied twice in the same season. It's happening, Matt.
That would be amazing.
And you know what's awesome about it? You know what's awesome about it? That means it's a 70-minute fantasy game. That means we get like 22 extra snaps, right? So you get to watch Daniel Jones, you know, throw a ball into the turf. You get to watch Taylor Heineke look over at the sideline with that confused look on his face and score another one for the rookie receivers, right? I mean, Jahan Dotson didn't win your game for you or anything, but 5 for 54 and a touchdown on 9 targets, we'll take it. Of course, Washington doesn't play next week, so we'll see what their game plan looks like afterwards. Brian Robinson nicely added on to last week. You like to see rookie players or any player who's producing, stack it. You know, Pacheco kind of stacked it with the Pacheco. Robinson did the Robinson, right? 21 for 96, no touchdown, yeah. Couple of catches that plays. Any game that they're competitive in, and it seems like every Washington game is competitive or they win, even though their record is misleadingly good. Brian Robinson's got 15 to 20 touches of equity every week. Again, you have to have somebody place for him next week, but we'll take it, man. And then Darius Slayton, yeah, again, 6 for 90 and no touchdown you don't win your week because of that, but at least he's their most targeted guy. At least when they're going downfield, you know it's a Slayton play. I mean, I'll take it. And they do play next week, and I need Darius Slayton next week.
Yeah, for sure. He's been a huge find. Saquon Barkley, was good to see him having a nice game here. 18 carries, 5 catches. He gets a receiving touchdown. Now, the rushing wasn't efficient. 18 carries, 63 yards. But he has I saw him talking to – or saw reports of him talking to reporters and stuff like that, you know, asking him, like, oh, you have a shoulder injury? Are you, you know, you kind of wearing down? He's like, no, I'm just not playing well. Like, the last 2 weeks when he hasn't put up big numbers or whatever. And I think it's kind of refreshing to hear players say that, because it's like Austin says that on the show sometimes too. He's like, yeah, I had good numbers, whatever, I didn't play well. Like, and it's just like, we think players are like these, you know, just monotone metronome, like ding ding every single week. It's the same old tone, but it's not. Like, there's ups and downs within even a great season like Saquon's having. So it was just good to see him get back in the end zone here.
Do you ever go in a podcasting slump, Matt? Did you hit a wall right before Thanksgiving, maybe, or something like that?
I'll tell you what, Scott. I thought coming up to this game today, because I was so like, whew, or coming up to this podcast, not this game. Give me a break. I'm not playing games here. I was like, you know what? This probably is going to be a bit of a low energy show because I'm a little tired. You know, it was a big day of football, a lot of energy there. But you know what? I think this has been a pretty good show. So, but to answer the question. Yes, definitely. Don't you feel the same way sometimes? It's like, nah, I just don't like, I don't have it. I don't have it as much.
I'll admit, the shows that we do, nobody wants to hear us complain about anything, but the shows that we do when there's a London game or a Germany game, whatever, and you just have that extra window, which means you just, you know, your whole day started 3 or 4 hours earlier. That's a long day. At the end of those days, I feel like that's our version of an overtime game, right?
Yeah. Well, especially for you, I got a harsh reminder of this when I was back on the East Coast. I'm like, yo, because you're on Eastern time there in Detroit. I'm like, yo, I'm tired by the end of these days on the East Coast. But yeah, you're right. Nobody wants to hear us complain. I don't know if anyone wants to hear about this next game here, but we're going to talk about Browns 27, Texans 14. Let's just get this out of the way, Scott. I thought Deshaun Watson did not play well in his game. The numbers back it up. He was the worst quarterback by a comfortable bit, too. He was the worst quarterback in EPA per dropback. Just watching him early in the game, he was off. He was not playing well. You know, he looked like a guy who hasn't played football in like 700 days. So I was definitely confused, though, by the game plan here, because it felt like they got away from Nick Chubb, man. And like, this was the worst time to get away from Nick Chubb, because it was such a smooth matchup for him to come and crush this game. The Browns end up winning pretty much almost no thanks to their offense that went scoreless for a long period of time in this game.
Yeah, the Browns defense was one of the stars of the day. You look at an opponent you can exploit, a quarterback you can exploit, and they score all their touchdowns on defense, special teams. Watson, we said there was a wide range of outcomes. I do feel good about this. A lot of people who had start sit questions on Watson, almost every time I told them to sit Watson because their other option was reasonable, and I wanted to see it, because not playing football for 2 years and not being able to practice for the team until recently. And it's not like the Browns, they have respectable talent at receiver. You know, Cooper's a good player. Obviously, Njoku couldn't go today, which was a loss, but it's not like this is a plug-and-play offense that anybody just steps into it and is really good. And not surprised to see like Cooper have a 4 for 40, no touchdown line on 9 targets. That's kind of to be expected with the first Watson game back. A little frustrated. I gave out the Texans as a +7 side. And I feel like if you just looked like what they did without giving away a punt return touchdown and the 2 defensive scores, I actually feel like this was a competitive game. Houston was actually ahead 5-0 at one point. But it's no fun to talk about Watson. But he's back in NFL uniform. I thought it was reasonable that he might have a rough game. He played worse than I think even the worst possible game I would have expected. Maybe it wasn't as bad as he actually played today, but whatever. He's going to get better. So, you know, if you're a Cooper manager, you're going to play him. DPJ next week you might want, because 6 teams don't play. I don't think the Browns have their bye week, right? Yeah, they've already had it. So You may want to play DPJ next week, but I don't like talking about Watson. I don't have him anywhere. I'm glad we're not talking about some huge game for him. It's just, he's the guy I can't root for. And I just want to wear that on my sleeve, you know, be honest about it.
Yeah, totally. And look, I think it's totally fair for you and other people to, and anyone that wants to feel that way can feel that way about it. Like, it should feel that way about it, because it is uncomfortable and it is weird. It's definitely weird to talk about. It's always weird with this stuff, right? Because there are guys out there that you know they've done some horrible things, but
right. I don't want to act like this is isolated. Like, the only, you know, the only
right.
guy
for sure, that would
say
totally
this about is Deshaun Watson. Yeah. The rest of the NFL is totally upstanding people, have never done a thing wrong. I mean, that'd be kind of silly. Like, it was interesting that, like, LeBron James quit following the Cowboys because he didn't like the way Jerry Jones responded to the kneel down stuff, which is totally fine, totally reasonable take. So he went back to being a Browns fan. It's like, well, you know, what's the collateral damage with that?
Yeah, exactly. You know?
But you can say that every team. It's like when people say, oh, you're a Patriots fan, they're such cheaters, man. It's like, you know, the 70s Steelers practically invented steroids. And the Seattle's 12th man was Adderall. And the 49ers dynasty was all about cap, you know, cheating the salary cap. And the Cowboys dynasty, those guys had a police blotter. There isn't an underbelly. There's a rock to be turned over with every franchise. And so we have to, you know, sometimes you have to separate the art from the artist. You have to decide, do you root for the team you grew up with? Do you root for the team, you know, that stylistically, you know, completes you? For a long time, I was an Arsenal soccer fan because I liked the style they played. And then they sacked their manager and they get rid of all the players I liked. And I'm like, well, I'm not going to root for them in perpetuity. The reason why right. I fell in love with this team doesn't exist anymore. That's why maybe the smartest guy in all this is you. You know, I feel like you're always a free agent fan and you'll just go to the team that's most entertaining in the moment or in the season. And maybe there's something to be said for that.
Well, that's the first time anybody's ever said the smartest guy in all of this is you, but I'll take it because I do think I'm mentally protected by not rocking with the ups and downs of it. But yeah, I mean, with the Watson, it's just, you know, we're just gonna, at least on this show, like, you know, we're gonna talk about what he's accused of and everything, and like how uncomfortable it is to talk about sometimes. But we're gonna analyze him honestly as a football player. And the honest analyzing today was that he was not good. And like, I always kind of thought, like, hey, it's a little like suspicious that people think like, oh, it's, you know, and what we're definitely not going to do is come in and be like, whoa, Watson's back, like wheels up emoji for the Browns offense. And by the way, like, not only do I think that's kind of a gross thing to do, I also think it's completely disingenuous. Like, yeah, the guy hasn't played for almost two years now at this point. Like, give me a break. Like, he's just going to come back and like, and the offense was good with Jacoby Brissett, you know, like that's another part of this too. It was pretty funny that they threw out Jacoby Brissett as like a decoy QB sneak because he's so good at QB sneaks. And then they end up doing like an end around to Harrison Bryant. I was like, hey, maybe save that one. That's a cute little trick you just did there. Maybe save that one for a not Houston Texans game, but I'm going to leave it at that. But like, yeah, the offense was good and efficient with Jacoby Brissett. Like, I think it's pretty reasonable to think like it might take, look, and Watson might come out next week and have a great game, but I think if he doesn't, it's pretty reasonable to expect that to happen. Texans side of this, man, let me tell you what, Scott, your Texans bet there, thwarted by the fact that Kyle Allen, like, enough already with Kyle Allen. Like, he threw a ball right to a defender's chest on a screen. Just unbelievable stuff. Like, enough already with Kyle Allen. I know that Nico Collins gets in the box. He has his 10 targets. Like, Damian Pierce, 18 carries, 73 yards, neato. But, like, just go back to Davis Mills. I know Davis Mills is not the answer, but like, we don't need to be seeing Kyle Allen play football games with this Houston Texans team.
And this might have been the last waltz for Damian Pierce. He gets the Browns rushing defense, which is a great draw. Has a solid game, not a great game, but I mean, whatever. You played them, you got something out of it. They're at Dallas. They get the Chiefs. They're at the Titans. I know the Titans didn't play well today, but that's not a good draw. I mean, Damian Pierce, I think, is going to be on a lot of fantasy benches the rest of the season.
Yeah, I definitely think so. Next game up, Seahawks 27, Rams 23. We kind of buried this one a little bit because this game was fun, man. Like, in the afternoon window when the Bengals and Chiefs are going off, you know, the 49ers are doing their thing against Miami, you know, the Chargers are trying to come back against the Raiders. Like, this was quietly a really, really entertaining game. You could tell that the Rams defense was up for this one. They wanted to win this game. Matthew Stafford put on IR. Sean McVay announced he has like a spinal contusion. That sounds great. But in the end, Geno Smith makes another really impressive, like, game-winning drive. He was awesome in this game. Lockett gets in the end zone, has 100 yards. Metcalf, 100 yards, a touchdown. What a beautiful receiving core. The big fantasy news coming out of it was Kenneth Walker, who's dealing with an injury and, you know, missed the rest of this game after leaving.
Yeah, it's a 6 straight games for Geno Smith. Quarterback rating over 100. And I wish, if you could have gotten the Geno Smith before the season, even if you didn't draft him, it would have been really easy, Matt. If you decide, if you knew, if you like had a Seahawks spy, you know, or you're good friends with Doug Farrar or Mina Kimes, they say, look, Geno's a lot better than everybody realizes. He's been unbelievable in practice. I guarantee you, he has like a Pro Bowl level year. You might say, okay, I'm not sure how I feel about that, but you know what? I'm going to have all the Metcalf, all the Lockett, because they were so affordable at ADP.
Yeah.
They both go over 100. They both score. They both get targeted heavily. They both have great chemistry with Geno. Geno's great, man. He will stand in the face of the Rams. You said this was a fun game. A lot of lead changes. There's punching back on both sides, which is always good for fantasy. And Geno, he's really good about not dropping his eyes towards the rush. He knows where his bread is buttered, even though he will spread the ball around a lot. But, I mean, still 20 of the targets goes to his two alphas that maybe needed to throw the ball a little bit more with Walker getting hurt. I think getting the Seahawks right was one of the best things you could have done for fantasy. And I wish, and I love, you know, I love Metcalf. You know, I love Lockett. Lockett is one of my most rostered players over the last 4 or 5 years if I added it up cumulatively, but I don't have a lot of them this year. And it's because I couldn't get the Geno Smith. It's not that I disliked Geno. I thought that Geno was going to be on such a short leash that the moment he had one bad game, they'd be like, well, let's see what Drew Lock looks like. And then Lock is a bad game. Well, right. Let's go back to Geno. I thought both guys were going to play. I thought both guys would get at least 4 or 5 starts. And Geno obviously seized this job early on. And then the question is there pumpkin risk? Well, he's not pumpkining, man. He's been great 6 weeks in a row. On the Rams side of things, gross offense. Wolford, you know, obviously is a backup. He shouldn't be playing, but he has to play. He got hurt in this game. Perkins played for a little bit. Then Wolford came back in. But at least they picked a lane at running back. I mean, look, 17 carries for 60 yards is nothing special. But Cam Akers had all the market share, and he scores 2 touchdowns. And you know, if we can get to somebody having double-digit carries and touchdown equity in the backfield, that makes him a fantasy factor. We have to talk about Cam Akers. My friend Joe Dolan, he does a great radio show on Sirius with Paul Kelly on game day. And they talk about the sick of it touchdowns, which is like the guys who play, who score, who everybody, you know, who would want that guy for fantasy. And one of their producers puts it together and they put Cam Akers in there. And I texted Joe. I said, you know, Cam Akers is like the only Ram I think I could start with any self-respect right now.
Self-respect. Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
I don't know how much self-respect I have left, but I have some of it to spend on Cam Akers.
I mean, my God, Scott, please respect yourself. Please respect yourself. Have some self-respect.
R-E-S-P-E-C-T, man. It's like, you know, the Rams are socking it to me. What can I say?
Oh, God, Cam Akers, man. Yeah, no, I agree with you, though. Like, if they pick a lane at running back and it is Cam Akers, like, Akers isn't a terrible player. That would be great to see. I don't know how much of faith I have trusting it, but I agree.
Were you loving the 4 carries, the 2-2 out? Well, they did go for 23 yards. McVay was, you know, letting his hair down a little bit.
Oh, God, the Rams, man. What a strange, strange team. I do think John Wolford being back there makes the offense, like, legitimate, whereas with Bryce Perkins, like, it was just not legitimate. Like, remember, Bryce, John Wolford was a guy that Sean McVay wanted to start over Jared Goff in a playoff game before. You know, like, I think Wolford's got a little.
That's how much they'd given up on Goff at that point. But yeah, you're right.
Yeah. It is a thing. It is a thing that happened. All right.
Did you watch all the John Wolford snaps at Wake Forest? Can you speak to his anything about Wolford? Any receiver you like here? Can you play Van Jefferson with any level of confidence?
Define level of confidence. Like, I think if you need to play, yeah, if you need to play,
when you're asking for definitions, you've said no already.
Correct. Yeah. If you need, unless you need me to, how deep is your league? How desperate, you know, that type of stuff. Yeah. No, the answer is probably no.
Well, it's like when the fantasy analyst gets asked like a question on the radio, like start so and so or so and so, and they're like, is this PPR? They're just trying to buy an extra second.
Buy an extra second. Like, just hedge a little bit too, like, now
you're a favorite in your matchup. Are you the favorite here?
Okay. Oh yeah, because that always matters.
Are you the commissioner of your league? Are you the do you have any fab money left?
Is it your birthday month? What sign are you? You know, stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. You're gonna eat chicken today. Okay, good. All right, I have my answer now.
Yeah, in that case, start the wide receiver in the flex. Okay, Steelers 19, Falcons 16. You know what? Some things to talk about in this game, I guess.
Every Falcons game is the same. It's horrible. This is every Falcons game. It's just like this. No scoring, no fantasy juice, no fun.
But we got 12 targets and 95 yards out of Drake London, though, Scott. Like, hey, that's a godsend, right? I mean, like, how many goofballs have popped up for the Falcons along the way? 12 targets for Drake London, five targets on America's bench.
But yes, and in the same day where Pickens gets 2 yards, and the Falcons' touchdown goes to McCall Pruitt, for crying out loud. McCall Pruitt.
Yeah.
If anybody started McCall Pruitt, write to me. I'm going to give you a present. Okay, find me McColl, the first person. I can't guarantee a million presents. Maybe there's a million McColl Pruitt fans out there. Somebody tweet me that you played McColl Pruitt this week, and I'll give you like a bobblehead I'm not using or something.
If you have to send out a million presents for, you know, Pruitt stands, I would be surprised, Scott. So I think that's
Christmas.
Pretty simple.
It is Christmas. It's about time I gave something back to the people.
You're giving him fire takes on this podcast. There's that. Kenny Pickett looked decent in this game. You know, Deontay Johnson has 11 targets, 60 yards. Talk about, like, the Steelers look the same every single week. Deontay Johnson's stat line looks about the same every single week. Continues making a couple boneheaded plays per game. I'm definitely, like, you know, I've been a Deontay Johnson fan. I'm not saying I'm done with Deontay Johnson, but I'm not like going to go to the bat. I'm not going to go to the bat and defend him for, you know, every goofball mistake he makes, because he's making it tough this year. George Pickens, yeah, that was disappointing. Just 2 yards. I wish I had had the stones to take the under when Andy Behrens threw it out there on the FFL prop segment, but I was too scared. I took the over.
What was
on Deontay
the total?
Johnson.
What was the pick? What was the it was
like,
total?
It was like 45.5, and I was taking the over on Deontay Johnson 55.5, which hit. But I didn't then think, like, all right, I got to take the how was I thinking two Steelers receivers were going to have plus 60 yards in one game?
I would have gotten both of those wrong. I would have been like, Johnson's such a trap. Go bury the under, and I would have liked Pickens. If I had to bet one of those things, I would have bet Johnson under all day. At least Freiermuth did something. Again, in a year where tight end, we just want a sip of – we're on a oasis, and we haven't had anything to drink in such a long time. And then we see like a soda can, and it's like just like one sip of soda in there, and it's flat and it's gross, but it tastes so good because we haven't had anything to drink. Pat Freiermuth's good. And you know what? Pickett looks better every week. I'll say that. Yeah. He's improving. What else can you really ask for? He looks better every week. That's something.
Yeah, they just need an offensive coordinator change so bad. Like, they need Blame to Canada. Overhaul that. Yeah, they have to overhaul that entire unit there. All right, last game up. We've waited long enough. Ravens 10, Broncos 9. Put the Broncos aside for a second. Let's just talk about the Ravens, because Lamar Jackson left early with an injury. It's a knee injury. John Harbaugh said he is not out for the season, but said he's out days to weeks. Well, that's not very clear. Tell you what, Scott, I don't care about this offense at all. If Lamar Jackson's not playing.
Well, I'll say this. At least, you know, Huntley can do a few things, right? I mean, he can run. He get a touchdown. He knows the offense. He played a lot last year. They could be worse off at backup. You know, there could be a lot of teams don't have. They have something.
Yeah, but they can't be worse off at wide receiver. That's the thing. Like, last year, at least when Tyler Huntley was in there, like, Bateman was playing to the end of the year. You know, they had Marquise Brown. Like, they have nothing at this point. Like, Lamar Jackson wasn't even scoring any touchdowns. Like, I don't have any faith in the Ravens offense without Lamar Jackson.
Right. Yeah, I think the stat is Jackson had 12 touchdowns in his first three games, and he has 8 touchdowns since. You can't ding him for today because he only played a few snaps. But it feels the Ravens are one of these teams that it feels like all their scoring drives have to be 15 plays. And that usually ends up being a Justin Tucker field goal anyway. They get just enough done to beat the Broncos, but man, the Broncos. Dude, Greg Dulcich, he's like tight end one right now on 6 for 85 without a touchdown. That tells you how horrible a tight end day it was. And Latavius getting all the carries. But again, the Broncos have – you're going to get at most one touchdown a week from this team. Today it was all field goals. I mean, how can you play anybody on an offense where it's like, okay, there's one touchdown, everybody fight for it. You know, who is it going to? Is it going to go to Kendall Hinton? Is it going to go to Mike Boone? Is it going to go to Marlon Mack? Is it going to be on special teams? It's they're the worst. The only thing good about the Broncos, their defense is so nasty that their under ticket is like the biggest. When I said 39.5, I'm like, you kidding me? For my throwing darts column, I wanted to give up this game 5 times, and it never came close. 10-9 with a late touchdown from the Ravens.
Yeah. I mean, the Broncos, my God.
What could Denver do? How could Denver possibly – they have Wilson signed for such a long time.
Yeah,
how do you get out of this? I know they can fire the coach. It's not a big deal because the ownership is so much money, but I don't know what they're going to do with Wilson except just sit there and languish in misery.
Yeah, I saw Stephen Ruiz from The Ringer tweet about this. Like
the Stephen Ruiz, yeah.
Yeah, the Stephen Ruiz, yeah.
I don't want the false Stephen Ruiz popping in here. I only want true Stephen Ruiz takes.
Exactly. Yeah, he tweeted something. He's like, I went under the hood to look at the Broncos contract, and I'm paraphrasing, but he's like, my only conclusion is they have to fold the franchise. So yeah, it's like they could cut Russ. They'd be in, you know, salary cap hell for like 3 years or whatever. But I feel like they have to, you know, break. I guess you get in the problem there. Like, do they get into the situation where they like, hey, Russ, come in here and have some input on the coaching hire and all that, and like, you know, or do you think like, okay, we're not even gonna think about Russ anymore, we're just gonna do what's good for the team, bring in some competition for Russ. Like, I think they have to go down one of those two directions, and either both of them are a guy. I don't know. I just don't see how this is salvageable.
Is there any chance? Maybe the answer is no, but is there any chance that this is partially injury related, that he's just been hurt all year?
Yeah,
or
sure.
Just the fact that.
And they're a very injured team overall. They're a super injured team overall. Like, I didn't think their roster was as good as everybody thought it was coming into the year, but there's no doubt that Judy's been injured this year. Cortland Sutton suffers a hamstring injury in this game. Like, you know, KJ Hamler's on IR. Javonte Williams is out for the season. Garrett Bowles missed his time as well for this team. Like, they've definitely had injury problems, and Russ has had injury problems as well. So yeah, like, is there a chance that Russell Wilson bounces back and he's like a top 15 quarterback next year? I think that's probably possible. It would be, but you couldn't say that based on anything on film, because the film has been as bad as the results. And it would just be like, I don't think he has like bouncing back to be top five quarterback upside in his range of outcomes. So I think the Broncos are a little bit banged here with the whole Russell Wilson thing.
We didn't talk about him at all, but you know what's really very, very jaggy is Gus Edwards. I mean, he's not a bad football player. It's not like he should be laughed out of the NFL or anything. But
totally.
When he came back with that really strong first game back, a lot of people are like, here we go, Gus Bus. And he hasn't done a thing since. 6-for-12 today.
Yeah, been dealt with injuries too. I just think this offense is like so, so, so bad in Baltimore at this point. And J.K. Dobbins potentially coming back at some point. So we'll see where he's at from his rehab.
It bothers me that I have nothing against the Ravens, but it bothers me they're going to make the playoffs, because I feel like they have no chance to win the AFC. 0% chance.
I completely agree with you. I mean, they're just totally toast. Almost as much as Denver.
But they're 8-4. They're gonna make the playoffs.
I know. Yeah, they will.
And if the Jets went into Baltimore tomorrow, I'd expect the Jets to win.
Oh my God! I mean, now without Lamar, I think there's a lot of teams that could beat Baltimore. But
with Jackson, yeah, without Lamar, of course, that's a line moving event for sure. But. And they were so injured last year. And this year, they're going to be one of the most injured teams in the league, too.
Yeah. Oh. Well, we spent a lot more time talking about that game than I thought we would. Way too much time. Hopefully. I mean, I do hope people are still listening. That would be great if you listen to the end of the show.
I hope not.
But if
listening is optional. It's all about the downloads. Leave nice comments on the rate, review,
listen
download.
To the show. Please download, listen, and rate and review the show. But if you skip the last 5 minutes of Broncos Ravens, I ain't mad at you. Don't worry about that. All right. Officially going to do it for us. You can make yourself a smarter fantasy player and better, for God's sake, because the guy's on fire. If you follow @Scott_Pienowski, you can also, if you wish, follow me @MattHarmon_BYB. And while you're there, for God's sakes, do yourself another favor and follow @YahooFantasy as well. Sir Andy Behrens will be back to talk news, waivers, and, oh boy, the Treviso Babes. Mom's coming off a dominant win. Thanks to Amon-Ra St. Brown and Jalen Hurts. That's all going down on tomorrow's podcast. Until then, we're out.